We are now recording.
Hi, my name is Madi. I'm 25 years old. Today is Friday, the 20th of 2020. I'm in Anchorage, Alaska, looking at the snow outside. I'm here with my friend Issa, and we first met back in 2014 at the airport.
Yeah, my name is Issa. I'm 34 years old. Today is Friday, November 20th, 2020. I'm currently in my childhood bedroom in Bay City, Michigan, but I usually am in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm luckily not looking at the snow. And my partner here is Madi. And Madi and I, we're friends. I don't know how else to say it. I thought a lot about how to introduce you, but you're my friend. So, Madi, thanks one for asking me to be the person that gets to talk to you today. And I really do think that, like, when I went to go fill out the data sheet, it gave a bunch of lists of how we know each other. And one of them said friend, mentor, mentee, colleague. And I thought, like, how do I decide how I know Madi? So I ended up marking friend because I think after the many years we've known each other, at this point, you're now my friend. And so I'm happy to hear that you also said friend as how you know me, because I think our relationship's gone through many iterations in the time that we've known each other. So maybe let's start there. How did we start and how did you first know me?
I remember when I first arrived here to Alaska, you were waiting on me at the airport with other friends as well. And I was a little kind of, is a new place. I was kind of nervous how this place is gonna look like, which is where I'm at right now, Anchorage, Alaska. And I was your client, and then you became my teacher, educator. Then I believe you traveled. I became one of the employees at Trace, which is where you work right now. And then you came back, you become a colleague. Then I left, and we become friends, maybe outside of of that interview. But you were all of it. You were a friend, you were an educator, you were a teacher, you were a colleague as well.
Yeah, it's interesting for me to hear your perspective of the story because, you know, it's we'll talk more about like how you got here and everything else, but you, I don't know if you know this, but I have only ever gone to the airport to pick up two refugee arrivals in my entire 8 years of resettlement work. So I've worked in refugee resettlement for 8 years. I've only ever gone to the airport two times. And the first time I had ever gone to the airport to pick up a family was your family. You know, that was not my job. It just was total happenstance. And then here we are 6 years later. And well, you've become a very good friend of mine. And a person I trust and a person I call when I need advice. I never thought that when I went to the airport to pick you up, that would be the result, that we'd be sitting here on Friday, November 20th, having this conversation, right? So anyways, I'm just really happy to be here with you. So tell me first, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in a lot of different places. So I remember, I was born in Somalia, and then I left Somalia back in 2006. And then from there, I spent from 2006 until today in four different countries and four different places. I think when the war started in 2006, we had to leave home. And as normal, we always go to the nearest place. And the closest place to where we live was actually Ethiopia, which is a place that we didn't knew anything about. And then we moved from Ethiopia to Sudan, Sudan to Libya, and then Libya to Egypt. Then from there, I moved to Alaska.
So you've been many more places than I have been, not by choice, of course, but in all of those travels and all those different things you did with your family as you walked through displacement, ultimately to resettlement, what are those secondary countries? Which one of them do you think meant the most to you? Or what's a memory you have from one of those secondary countries?
I think I would say Egypt and Alaska, maybe, because I learned a lot because I was very young when I was in Libya. I was in school. I didn't go outside much. I didn't interact with people. much because no one spoke my language. The only language I spoke was Arabic, Somali, and then they spoke Arabic, which is kind of, I was learning their language. So it was kind of a process of just understanding how people live in Middle East, because they kind of share the same culture. They all kind of close from each other. They all in the same area. But once I reached Egypt, it was kind of the teenager who really goes outside more, learning the language, and I spoke Arabic very well. And that's where I really learned a lot from the people of Egypt as well. And Alaska, of course, which is where I live now.
So how old were you when you left Somalia?
13 years old. Yes, I was. I remember that's where when the war starts back in 2006. Yeah, I also remember I was in school and then things went crazy in my city. I mean, people were kind of panicking and running around all the time. Then we had to leave at that point because things were getting very dangerous for us. And yeah, that's, I think, where the whole journey starts from there until today.
You know, it's Somalia, for many people, myself included, because, you know, I know most Somalis because they've been resettled, right? So they're refugees here in the United States. And so I think a lot of times we think of Somalia as a place that is a place of civil war, of violence, of challenges and struggles. But of course, it wasn't always that way. So can you tell me a memory you have of like a good day in Somalia when you were younger, before the war started? What was like a perfect day? What were the things you enjoyed doing in Somalia before the upheaval of the civil war?
I mean, before 2006, everything were wonderful. I mean, things were good, nice. I was going to school as all kids in my village, in my neighborhood, and I was playing outside with them and then just helping my family. I mean, we had like a farm that was a small kind of business for us, and that's where we had the food and everything. But there's a lot of memories really in my head about Somalia and my village specifically that I miss a lot, but it was great. Yeah, it was very nice before the war started back in 2006.
So you had a farm back home in Somalia. Now you are part of a farm here in Alaska. Did you ever believe or think that your mom, of course, who has a farm in Alaska and quite successful this year with her farm business, your whole family really became farmers again. Did you ever imagine that you would be a farmer in Somalia to a farmer in Alaska?
No, I was kind of surprised actually, because I never thought I'm going to have a farm in Alaska or like a place where I really grow food and things like that. Like I mean, that could be a small thing from home that we maybe brought with us and you could still have here in Alaska. But yeah, but I never thought I would ever grow something anywhere else when I left home. I mean, we didn't have the opportunity to grow anything in Egypt, at least because it's a big city where a lot of people, not much space is available. But yeah, I mean, in Alaska, thankfully, we have a place where we really grow our food.
Mm-hmm. So you, of course, came through the refugee resettlement program. And how, you know, when you were going through that process, when you started it in Egypt and you're going through the screenings and you were doing everything, what was in your mind? What were you thinking? What were you expecting? What was your family expecting? Did you think you were actually going to be resettled?
No, actually, when you're in Egypt and register for the UNHCR, and you never know where you will be next because the UNHCR determined where you're going next. So you're just waiting for your case. There's people, lawyers, volunteers who are really helping your case to go through the process of resettlement. And once the process or your file go through, you're just waiting for the location where you're going to be resettled at. I was actually thinking of a lot of places. The only thing I knew is going to be far away from home or far away from where I lived, which is in Egypt and Somalia, because they kind of all close from each other. And I was maybe lucky enough to be in Alaska. And that's where, and that's how I got here. Yeah, that's where the thing started back in the days. But we didn't know much about Alaska even back there when I was in Egypt. I think when they told us that we are going to Alaska, you basically receive an email from them, tells you the city and the location or the state where you're going. And at this point, I didn't know anything about Alaska. The only thing I did was I just looked, Google it, and look at the map and internet and see some how Alaska or the place that we're going to be living in the future is going to look like. And the only thing I saw was mountains and snow, which just doesn't make sense to me, because if you look at the map, you will find Alaska in the south near Mexico. I don't know if you noticed that or not, but sometimes they will show us in a map that, because they don't want to include Canada, so they will just move Alaska to the south. And I knew Mexico is a hot place. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. I mean, snow and the warm place next to each other. Anyway, I believe the story that it's south. I told all my friends, all my family. I told my mother here that we are going to Alaska and it's near Mexico. Hot and snow at the same time, which is kind of very confusing to me. But a friend of mine actually told me, after I told everyone about the story, he told me that no, it's north, it's very cold, snow. I mean, it's also hard for people to live in this place, which is kind of scary to me back for like a person who knew nothing about Alaska. Yeah.
So So you thought you were going to go to a warm place, and then the reality hit you that you were going to a very cold place. How did you feel when you learned that? Were you nervous? Were you scared? How did you feel?
I was a little nervous. Another thing I did was I called. So when you knew that, like when I first knew that I'm going to Alaska, I called my like people who live in the U.S. I mean, I have some relatives, friends who live in the U.S., I called them, I'd ask them what they think of Alaska. I mean, do you know about Alaska? How is it like? What should we bring with us that we couldn't find it there or anything? And they all said that it's a tough place to live in. And that makes me nervous. I mean, I'm 100% sure that they didn't know anything about Alaska because they were in different states, not in Alaska actually. But that makes me nervous, and maybe it was a little scary for me. Then it was like, just go and see how it's like, and maybe if you didn't like living in Alaska, maybe move from there into a different place, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you remember? Because of course, the plane trip is very long to Alaska. We're one of the longest plane trips really for refugees to have to take. What do you remember about that flight, and what do you remember thinking on your way? Well, to leave your home continent, right? To leave the only place you'd ever known as home, to come all the way across, you know, basically the globe to a brand new place, to a place you didn't know anything about. How did you feel on that trip and as a family, because you traveled with your siblings and your mom, how did they feel, you think?
One of my brothers here was very excited. I wasn't excited. I was actually planning for my next trip after Alaska. I mean, I travel with the idea that Alaska is a tough place to live in based on what my friends mentioned. And I was kind of planning, where should I go next? I mean, Alaska is far away. It's also hard to plan or where to move next because it's a totally different place. I mean, it's easier to plan when you are in Middle East, because they're kind of close, you could move around countries very easily, but not in Alaska. So I was actually thinking of what the next step would be from Alaska once I get there. And remember that I'm not there even yet, but I was kind of thinking ahead of time. I was kind of also open to explore the place as well, which I did when I first got here.
Mm-hmm. So like we said in the beginning, I happened to be the person that picked you up from the airport, who greeted you and your family at the airport. And what month did you arrive? And what was your very first impressions either of me at the airport or of like getting to your first apartment, like as we got to your house? Like, what was your impression of that whole experience?
Yeah, so I had a picture of mine of like mountains and snow and being cold in Alaska. And I don't know if you remember that or not, but when I first arrived in Alaska, we were driving from the airport to our apartments, and I asked you where the snow at, where all the talk that people were talking about. I remember it was in July, it was kind of summertime, things were green, nice. I mean, it wasn't cold at all. It was kind of warm to us as well. And then you said, I don't know if you remember that, but you said that the snow is coming. It's summertime now. And I turned to my brother who was sitting in the back seat, and I told him, maybe we are in the wrong place. Maybe we are not supposed to be here or something. But yes, yeah. Yeah, then, yeah, you explained how things work. Well, it's summertime, of course, not cold yet, but yeah, that's...
So you really did come to Alaska in the best month, which you now know because you've lived in Alaska now the rest of your time here in the U.S. And so we all know that July is the best month in Alaska. It's like if everyone came to visit Alaska in July, we would have a much higher population in Alaska. But then it does get harder, right, as the winter comes. So, you know, your first impression was this really great Alaskan summer, which is usually quite beautiful and there's long days and all these things. How did that change for you as you, you know, got out on the bus in the summer months and then it consistently got colder and darker? How did you feel about Alaska as we moved into the winter in those first few months?
Yeah, our first winter in Alaska was one of the toughest year in Alaska in winter. The other thing is the timeline. I mean, as a Muslim, I mean, we care a lot about the time. When should we pray and when should we eat in Ramadan, for example? I mean, it was a lot confusing. And we were depending on phone and apps just to track time and prayers. And when we reach out to our friends outside of Alaska, they were like, the time zone is different. We call them when they are asleep or overnight, which wasn't fun for them. But yeah, the first winter was very tough for us. Yeah, but the good thing is, the second winter of the following year, we knew we kind of learned a lot from the previous year. So we just kind of a little prepared maybe for winter.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to prepare for something you've never seen before. I think that's the case for lots of people when they first come. Yeah. So in those first, like, say, 6 months in Alaska, what moments of your, like, life or your family's life in those first 6 months really stand out as, like, memories that you just remember that so vividly, you know? Is there anything that happened in those first 6 months that you're like, oh, I just remember how that felt or what we did?
Avoiding go outside during the winter because... I mean, you will have to go outside. I didn't have a car. I wasn't driving or anything. I didn't have the driver license just walking from your home to the bus stop was very challenging for a person who never seen snow before. But yeah, I think that's one of the things that comes in mind in our first 6 months.
Mm-hmm. And what about individuals? I mean, you met a lot of people in your first 6 months. Were there people that stood out to you as people you just remember, people that felt like you could go to, like, that really helped you in those first 6 months?
A Somali community also lived in my neighborhood. We were kind of connected and then visiting each other, and we kind of like, they were like providing us with information. I mean, how you should do this or how you should do that. But yeah, that was kind of a little helpful to have a community or people who live around you who speak your language and know how you're feeling when you first come here. Don't worry, we know your feeling, we know what you're thinking of, all of that. But yes, that was very helpful to me, actually. Yeah.
So when you think about that very first few months you were here, before you had a job, before you were working, before you, you know, had gotten yourself, you know, kind of up and running, what did you think your life was going to be like in Alaska? What did you expect at that time?
Yeah, I thought that I will be here for like just a year maybe or something. Then I'm just going to keep moving into a warmer place somewhere in the south, but over time I kind of like it actually. I mean, I learned how to deal with a lot of things. Another thing, it's just the people who live in Alaska were kind of help with the how understanding how things work, maybe because they were kind of friendly. I mean, especially in my neighborhood, I mean, I didn't see anything. I mean, people were very welcoming, and that's another thing that makes me maybe stay here now.
Yeah. What are the other reasons you stayed? Because I think Alaska is a unique place. Lots of people don't know a lot about Alaska, so I'm not shocked you thought it was by Mexico. I can tell you when I moved here, someone who was born and raised in the United States told me I couldn't drive here because it was an island. They thought the same thing as you. So don't worry. You're not the only person who thought that. But there's something about Alaska, and I actually believe this is a person myself who came to Alaska, didn't have any intentions to stay. I came for what was supposed to be 2 years for a graduate degree. And now here I am nearly 10 years later, and Alaska is still my home. There's been some moving back and forth, but Alaska really is my home. Why do you think Alaska does that? And what do you think it is about Alaska that makes people so very different? You and I are very different. Make it feel like it's a place where
you
belong.
The more you spend time in Alaska, the more you learn about the people of Alaska. I mean, the lifestyle of Alaskans really help, like, because there's a lot of things to explore here. And the more you engage with people, the more you interact with people, helps you. I mean, it's not about me, it's about them. I mean, they make you stay for some reason. I don't know, I feel that way. When you talk to people, I mean, everyone I talked to back in my first year in Alaska, they make you kind of stay. They're kind of very welcoming. And we all kind of agree that to stay in Alaska, and we like living here. Yeah, we thought that this is the place that we could call home in the future.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting for me is that the answer you gave is the same answer I stay in Alaska, but it's also the reason I came back to Alaska, because you know I came back to Alaska to be the director of the refugee program 2 years ago, right? 2.5 years ago. And you're the reason I came back, which is kind of the weird thing. Like you and all the refugees I know, that's my city, that's my state. You know, you all who are so friendly to me, and you and I are very different, and yet we're friends. And Alaska, I believe, is kind of a place where you can be very different from people, yet still build friendships with them and still like learn from one another. So can you think of a relationship you have today with a person that you would have thought back home, I would never know that kind of person or be friends with that kind of person? Or, you know, for me, like I said, I'm sitting in my childhood bedroom. I didn't know a single person. I went to a high school where everybody was like middle-class white kids, mostly farmers in mid-Michigan. I had never met a person from Somalia, let alone a refugee. And so my life sometimes seems unbelievable. The people that are in my life today that I never thought would be in my life. Can you give an example of someone you kind of say like, yeah, that's true for me, that like those were not things I ever imagined would happen in my life.
So until you ended up in Alaska. Back when I was in Somalia as a child and growing up in all Arabic countries, I never thought I will one day interact with people who speak a different language, or English to be specific, because I mean, even in Somalia, Arabic become always the second language, and just moving here to Alaska and talking to people. I mean, there's a number of people, Lisa, to be honest. I mean, there's not one person. There are a lot of people who really were helpful, just talking to them and very welcoming. Even from the first day you met them, I mean, even they don't know you very well, but they're still kind of welcoming and make you like think of people, because one person could really change the way you're thinking of people of Alaska. But yeah, I mean, I met multiple people who really like makes me feel like I want to stay here for a bit long time.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things have you done in Alaska maybe that you never thought you would do? What kind of experiences have you had?
But I think I'm in the process of learning. I would I think I will try to take a picture of myself skiing and then send it back in Somalia to my friends and see what they're thinking. But yeah.
What about your first time fishing? Your first time going fishing? What were you fishing for? And like, did you ever think that that would be, I mean, I know back home in Somalia, of course you eat fish, or depending on where your village is, it could have been on the water. A lot of people eat fish back home, but in Alaska, fishing is like very important to Alaskans and they take it very seriously. And salmon is this very important thing. So how did you learn how to fish? And what was your first experience?
Us friends from Somalia as well, we just decided to go for fishing. Some of my friends know that I don't really like fish much. I prefer meat, but I go fishing as a sport, maybe not like I want to eat it or anything. I would just go have fun on fishing and maybe give the fish away to people. I would just treat it maybe as a sport or something, but not to eat it. But fishing in Alaska is a big deal. You have to go fishing, of course, if you're in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And when you went fishing the first time, how did you fish? Did you dip net? Did you, cast a fly rod?
I think the first time was a trip to Kenai, I believe. No, I think that's the first place I went in my first time fishing. And that was in my first year. And I remember just learning how to fishing as well, because I don't like fish back. I didn't fish before. I don't like fish in general. I prefer meat. I'm one of the meat eaters, but yes, I mean, yeah, I think Kenai was the first place I went fishing.
And how do you feel about salmon today? Do you still feel the same way?
In Alaska, but not like as in sport, not to eat it or anything like that. I normally give the fish away to people I know, or maybe friends, but I don't really eat fish. I mean, I eat it, but it's not my first option.
You've had a lot of jobs since you came to Alaska, and I got to go on that adventure with you. I got to help you get a lot of those first jobs, because I was, of course, helping you in that process when you first arrived. But thinking back to all the jobs you've had, what job do you think stands out the most to you, and why?
My current job as an educator, and my previous job as a trainer and educator for race as well, because they kind of both similar. You're kind of just helping people by educating and providing new information that they didn't know about before. And that's because both jobs kind of similar and close to each other. I was educator in both jobs, but yeah, the last two jobs, I mean, I'm an educator now at the Anchorage Museum, and I was an educator back in 2 years ago at Race, but yeah, I think those last two jobs are, I mean, as an educator, that's the job that I really like the most.
I think one of the things that's been interesting about knowing you, Madi, as long as I've known you, is that I think you're a helper. Like, I think you didn't know you were a helper, or maybe you did know you were a helper, but you're always helping. You're helping even when you don't need to be helping. You always step in. If I ever ask you to do something, you're willing to, like, whether it's your community or a different community, you just want to help people. But I think your whole family's kind of like that. It's been interesting to me to watch, out of the four siblings in your family, three of you have done AmeriCorps since you arrived to the United States. You dedicated an entire year to giving back to your community, to being of service. Why? Why is being of service important to you? Because I see you do it. I see you do it in the jobs you've chosen to do, and I see you do it in your day-to-day life. Like, because why do you think being of service is something important to you?
There's a lot of people who really worked for UNHCR. There's a lot of lawyers, volunteers who really make my case to go through the process of the resettlement. I wouldn't be here without them. But yeah, I mean, I believe that by helping, I mean, let's just transfer that. I mean, I help someone, this person will help another person, and the journey continues, and people will just help each other over time. And then we all kind of race at the same time, I guess.
So what would you say, you know, because you, I've seen, I think I respect you a lot. I'll say that, Madi, as someone who knows you, I respect you a lot. And I think one of the things I really respect about you is that you have maintained, and I watch refugees come from a lot of different countries and, you know, over their time in the U.S., some people become more Americanized. Some people really stay within their cultural groups. Some people really, you know, learn the language and integrate, you know, like there's a broad variety of experiences for people when they come. You are one of the people I have watched so closely stay who you authentically, culturally, and religiously are, while also becoming very integrated into your local community. You helping, you're a part of your local community, you attend, you know, meetings, and you do all these things to help your community. How have you done that? How have you maintained, and what does that mean to you to be a Somali, right? A Somali who came here, but also to be an Alaskan. How do you hold both of those identities, and how do you do that? Because you do it, like, I've never seen really someone do it so well as you. I have a lot of respect for you and how you do that. How have you done that so well to be in a new place, to meet new people, to meet people that are really outside of maybe even your cultural religious worldviews in some ways, and
so that's one
still maintain who you are so deeply
here in Alaska or outside, really worry about much, because they don't want their kids to lose the culture and not learning their native language once they leave home. But thankfully, I left home when I was good. Like, I knew everything I needed to know about the culture or the language of Somali people and everything. They're really, I mean, when you learn something as a young, in a young age, that will just stay in your mind for a very long time, or maybe forever. And I'm so grateful that I have teachers who really taught me a very good lessons back when I was in like elementary school. As a kid, I also learned, I taught myself, I learned a lot from my parents, and I had a person I used to visit all the time outside of school who taught me a lot about the religion, because I was always curious about a lot of things. They asked questions, and they didn't all like answering those questions, but I was kind of always asking all the time, and thankfully they were responding very well, even though they really were thinking of, you ask too much question, you ask a lot of questions, but I'm just curious. Yeah, I'm just thinking about it now that I was curious back then, but I wasn't thinking back then that I was real curious. But anyway, yeah, I learned. Yeah, I think that's what held me today, like, remains, like, or use my knowledge I learned back in the days, I think.
I recently got to go with you when you became a U.S. citizen, which was very exciting, and congratulations. What does it mean to you to be a U.S.
citizen? To me, that finally I could have more freedom. I have a place to call home now in Alaska. I don't have to travel or move anywhere now. I mean, hopefully there's no wars or anything, because I was kind of tired from moving too much. But yes, I think becoming a citizen, it's really helped me a lot to call this place home. It was kind of one of the things that maybe the last thing, it's when you become a citizen, there's also another responsibility that we'll still have to do. But anyway, yeah, I think the most thing is just to have a place to call home now.
You just said something that I really liked. You said there's a lot of responsibility when you become a citizen, and I think that's true for those of us that were born here and as citizens, but those of us that choose to make America our home, the United States of America our home. When you think about the responsibility you have as a citizen, what are some of the things you think are your responsibility now that you are a citizen to your community and to your country? that you, you know, imagine.
So will I'm help, a part of this community now.
Help you make decisions about your future. Like
affecting this community will also affect me as a person who also part of this community as well. And I think just the right for everyone is something I think we all should be thinking of. Everyone have the right to like do whatever they want, the freedom. Everyone have the right to vote. That's one of the responsibilities as well. But yeah, I think there's a lot of responsibility that's listed under the citizenship when you become a citizen.
Okay. Last question. If you could think of your best memory, the best day you ever had in Alaska, your very best
That's
day.
That's a tough question. Because
what day was it and what happened in why? Alaska?
For you, but the best day. I think when I become a citizen, maybe. Yeah, I think that's one of my best days as well. But yeah, but there's a lot also good days in Alaska.
Describe.
If you compare. Go ahead.
If you don't mind, describe the day you became a citizen.
So the way I think about it, when I become a citizen, is a long process. The process started when I first resettled, when I first left Egypt. I mean, 5 years is kind of a long time, I think. And within 5 years, I learned a lot of things. And I had the feeling that now, really, I feel like I learned a lot about how the system works here in the US. I know a lot about Alaska. I know about the people and their lifestyles and everything maybe I need to know, maybe the important things, I guess. And that was kind of the certificate that, hey, now you become a citizen, congratulations. And then I will just like do what everyone does in America as a citizen. One of the responsibilities, of course, that listed is voting and really enjoy your freedom and all of that.
You know what I remember most about your citizenship day, Madi? Is that you were late, that we were all there waiting for you and you were becoming a citizen. And we were all standing around, all these people that support you, who care so much about your family. And you showed up so late that I was like, Madi's not going to become a citizen.
Maybe because there was
today.
A lot of
and I thought,
people
some things
who
never
attended
change.
The
you know what I mean?
Because there were also other people who becoming a citizen. Yeah. Yeah, I remember was like, maybe it was a little late. That's true.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, I just want to say thanks, Madi, for asking me to do this with you. I've just had you have been one of the great gifts in refugee resettlement in my life, and you prove always what I say every time I'm out in the community, that refugees make us a better community, a brighter community, a more fulfilling community. That's been true in my own personal life. My life is better because I know people who have come from all over the world with different thoughts and beliefs, and you've changed who I am as a person. I just want to thank you for using your voice, because the more you use your voice in Alaska, the more people hear about what it is to be a refugee. And so just thanks. Thanks for having a conversation with me for an hour today, or 45 minutes or whatever today.
As well.